Springfield's Talk 104.1. I am Nick Reed. It is Thursday, which means it is time for Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. Our author, Alfredo Ortiz, his book is The Real Race Revolutionaries, How Minority Entrepreneurship Can Overcome America's Racial and Economic Divides. And I want to thank you for being here with us this morning. And this book, we'll get into it itself here in a couple of moments. It actually grew from congressional testimony that you gave in the House of Representatives Ways and Means Committee back in spring of last year. But I would like to get a little bit of your background. And I know in the introduction or the very beginning of your book, there's a dedication there. And I suspect that is has a lot to do with your background and how it is that you ended up where you are and so involved when it comes to this particular issue. Tell us a bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely, Nick. So, well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's a real honor. And yes, the dedication is to my mom, Gloria Ortiz. Actually, she passed away about 10 years ago now. So probably the best darn mom in the whole wide world. Oh. So that's why the book's dedicated to her. But she actually came to the United States about 50 plus years ago, became a citizen in her late 50s, actually, and couldn't be more proud to be an American because she knew that this was really, truly the land of opportunity. My dad was a tailor. My mom was a housekeeper and seamstress, and they had a little tailor shop in Tijuana, Mexico. And then they came over to the United States and bought a little house in Chula Vista, California, which is where I was born. So I'm a firstborn American and couldn't be more proud of those roots. But we were pretty poor growing up in Chula Vista, California. And I remember on trash days, in fact, my mom and I used to go around in her big car, which is featured in the photo. And we used to fill that trunk up as much as we could with aluminum cans and newspapers, digging through trash cans on trash day. And then we would pop over to the YMCA and we cash that in, and that was her grocery man for the week. But she, I also say she was also the first entrepreneur that I ever knew, because she knew how to make ends meet. She would put on the best darn garage sales, bake sales, craft sales. I mean, you name it. But she knew how to really, like I said, make ends meet. And she sacrificed a lot to get me an education. I was actually the first one to finish high school, college, grad school in my family. And so, you know, to go from that, which is just unbelievable, to, you know, standing next to the President of the United States under the Trump administration, I was actually named a commissioner of the White House Initiative on Educational Excellence for Hispanics. And education for me, as you can tell, you know, was a big part of my life as well, and educators that believed in me. So that's who the book's dedicated to, my mom and all of her sacrifices to get me where I am today.
I should note, you're president and CEO of Job Creators Network. Was it in that capacity you were called to testify before Congress? And what was the purpose in calling you to testify?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was as president and CEO of Job Creators Network last spring. And I offered that testimony before the full House Ways and Means Committee. And it was a hearing on minority entrepreneurship. And, you know, it was interesting because the Democrat members and witnesses, they really argued for more big government policies for, you know, to overcome supposed structural racism holding minorities back. But, you know, I countered that argument, you know, and said that reducing the hurdles to entrepreneurship by having the government do less,
right,
not more, is the best way to empower minorities to improve their economic outcomes. And Nick, as you can imagine, it wasn't received too well by the Democrat members. Their respondent was saying that they were troubled by the rhetoric. I'm quoting this here. I pulled it from the tape. They were troubled by the rhetoric and claimed I was inappropriate and ignorant to argue minorities can overcome their circumstances through entrepreneurship. Imagine that. My background, poor Mexican, right, first born American, ignorance and inappropriate.
You know, that makes me angry for a number of reasons, but when I'm on a larger scope, and this has always gotten me, I'm going to get very conversational with you here. It's just the human aspect of it. And I remember as a kid, like so many of us, and you're in middle school and maybe high school, and they'd have these motivational speakers come. And if you ever read books on success and how to succeed by those who have done just that, it's never about pointing the finger, blaming others, expecting others to take care of you. It is just about identifying the obstacle, because no matter whom you are, you will have an obstacle. And sometimes they're unethical obstacles, sometimes they're immoral, sometimes they're just natural obstacles. But regardless, you get around it, you overcome it, you see it, you identify it. Okay, how do I move forward? And that is what produces meaningful results. That understanding is what, regardless of how you feel about any of this, that is what works. And what we see that doesn't work is, like you note here, taking people, particularly in a certain demographic, and telling them everything's stacked against you. The only hope you have is if we step in and help you. And it just infuriates me that these are people who are in charge. And then here you've got someone like you, who is an example of those meaningful results, that tradition, if you will, that is proven to be true over and over and over again in terms of a formula of success. And they talk to you like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was actually pretty unbelievable. I mean, it's worth almost looking at the tape, because I was pretty offended, I must admit, because I'm sitting there knowing what I know, of course, my background, and saying, how dare you, actually? I mean, call me ignorant and inappropriate. Right. I mean, no. I mean, I actually have lived this. I mean, like I said, to go from, you know, picking trash with my mom to standing next to the President of the United States as a commissioner. I mean, where else does that happen? I mean, and so you know, the book really tries to, you know, make the case that, you know, that the best way to really close racial income and wealth gaps is by expanding economic opportunities through the free market and capitalism. But ironically, you know, the very same free market that liberals want to curtail, regulate, and rule over, right, is the same, excuse me, in the name of addressing racism, is the most potent antidote to racism. Capitalism, as you know, actually financially punishes racial prejudice. And that's what the premise of the book is. And, you know, I'm actually glad that testimony happened and that pushback from them happened, because, quite frankly, it gave me the motivation to do this. And Nick, if I may leave you one data point, you know, to talk about and think about, and this is, by the way, was buried. I had to find this. A Congressional Black Caucus Foundation study. Yes, let me repeat that. A Congressional Black Caucus Foundation study found that median net worth for Black business owners is 12 times higher than for Black non-business owners. Think about that.
We're talking with
entrepreneurship is the way.
We're talking with our author of the week, Alfredo Ortiz. The book is The Real Race Revolutionaries: How Minority Entrepreneurship Can Overcome America's Racial and Economic Divides. You know, the foundation here for much of their justification and getting government involved in this and trying to micromanage people's lives or businesses based on skin color or race is the premise that we have systemic racism. And they will oftentimes point, I mean, I think any reasonable person will recognize, when you have a country with over 300 million people, you will have racist people. You're going to have people of all stripes, you know, I mean, but that doesn't mean that it's systemic, which is what they try and claim. And one of the things they will do is they'll point to statistics and claim that, those statistics validate their argument. And they will point to, you know, economic differences between the races. And they say, conclusion is because of racism. What is the root cause of those numbers, those statistics that show economic differences between races?
Well, you know, I mean, the big thing is, and the book points this out, is that it's not about racism that causes the numbers, right? And by the way, Nick, I have to say, is I'm not ignorant, and I'm not, rose-colored glasses here thinking that racism doesn't exist in this country. I know it does. I actually have been a victim of it. I got to tell you a quick little story, if I may.
Yeah.
You know, I was walking into Ohio, a luxury car dealership. This was about a dozen years ago, and I walked into the dealership and asked for a test drive. And they said, I'm sorry, we don't have cars for you to test drive. I said, well, what do you mean? You're like out of gas or something, you know? And they said, no, you don't understand. We don't have a car for you to drive. And so I was like, oh, wow, well, okay, I didn't
Okay.
quite catch that the first time around, you know? So look, I mean, I've been, and there's multiple examples where I've been a victim of it, but you know, the point is that we're not victims of that, right? We don't have to stay in that victimhood state. And it's not the government that's going to help solve this thing. Like I said, I own two small businesses myself. I sold my small businesses. They were really kind of the plank for me to continue to move forward and get ahead and be where I am today. And I'll tell you that after, you know, 10 years I've been running this organization, and I've seen countless minority entrepreneurs that have come from incredible backgrounds. They fled socialist countries like Nicaragua, Cuba, and stuff like that, and came here and established businesses and are flourishing, right? And they love this country. Indians who came from India, where the caste system, right, was really an extreme elite and extreme poor, they came here and they see this country and there's this beautiful middle class. They break through franchises and stuff like that. And this is what we need to protect this country. And by the way, Nick, we actually rolled out at the end of last year with former Speaker Newt Gingrich an 8-point plan called the American Small Business Prosperity Plan, because we have to make sure that our small businesses thrive and continue to survive. Because as you know, for example, in Missouri, it really, really, you know, COVID really, really took a beating to our small businesses across the country.
Right.
And I think in Missouri, especially minority-owned small businesses.
Speaking of minority-owned small businesses here in the Springfield area, I think it was last year, the year before, there was a grant, and you had the Downtown Springfield Association and Missouri State University and a number of other entities involved, and they had these grants, and if you were a white business owner, you weren't invited to apply. It was for people of color only. And so then, you know, they hand out these grants to these minority-owned businesses. And so some people, they, you know, it's just instinctively a wonderful thing. What could be wrong with that? What do you say to those folks?
You know, it's just really tough. I mean, I actually have one person on my team who lives in New Jersey, and her husband owns a restaurant and catering business. And they got pummeled during COVID, and they were really, really looking forward to some assistance with the Paycheck Protection Program, the first round, second round. And then when they found out, for example, I think there was another thing called the Restaurant Revitalization Fund, I think if I named that correctly. But then that was really only open for minorities. I mean, I have to tell you, I mean, that killed them, right? I mean, they were expecting, they needed that, because remember, government shuts stuff down. I mean, you saw that in Missouri. I mean, you know, these businesses shut down not because they wanted to, but because the government made them. Unfortunately, in states like Missouri and others, Republican governors actually did a good job of balancing the health of their state with the health of their economy and these small businesses, and were smart to do that. But you know, in these blue states with Democrat-run governors, they weren't so lucky. Like in New Jersey, for example, and New York, where I think, if I recall, the New York City restaurants, about 50% of them have basically now closed because of all the lockdowns and COVID and all that restriction. So, look, I mean, small businesses should be a class of their own, not minority,
Right.
but small businesses, because that is the way that everybody, I don't care if you're black, green, white, yellow, blue, Hispanic, Asian, left, right, I don't care. If you're a small business, that is really the backbone of our community. We have to make sure that our small businesses survive and thrive, because if they don't, I mean, there's no country.
Our final question for our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, a small business. This is Alfredo Ortiz, the president and CEO of Job Creations Network. And the book is The Real Race Revolutionaries, How Minority Entrepreneurship Can Overcome America's Racial and Economic Divides. So just, I suppose, elevator pitch, people, your average person, they're subject to media, they're subject to a lot of propaganda, and they believe minority-owned businesses, they have a rough time, they see the numbers that show that they just somehow aren't able to make it as successfully because of systemic racism. And so what's wrong with government coming in and sort of tilting the scales just to give equity, to make sure that everyone comes out equal? What can be wrong with that? What harm does it do? What's your ultimate message?
Well, I think the ultimate message is that equality was never a promise by our federal government, right? If you think about our founding fathers, they never promised equality, right? Just that if you work hard, you play by the rules, right, that you have an equal shot at succeeding, right? But not an equal shot of everybody being equal, right? Mm-hmm. It's just something that's unfathomable, at least for someone like me. I mean, when I saw my mom and the sacrifices that she worked, I mean, she worked hard to get me forward, right? She worked hard to do what she did to get me advanced. And I have worked hard to get to where I am. And so, you know, but that is what this country rewards. It's grit. It's, you know, it's ingenuity. It's that willingness to really put everything that you've got in your belief in yourself and in your vision and your ideas. And that's what we should be rewarding in this country. And so, you know, that's why we're big proponents of the, first of all, we work really, really hard to help get the Tax Cut and Jobs Act passed, which, by the way, two key provisions, which is the reduced tax rates for small businesses and immediate expensing. There are two very, very important elements that were included in the Tax and Jobs. Those are set to expire at the end of 2025. So we are really pushing hard to try to get this Congress to make them permanent. But again, we shouldn't look at it equality of outcome, right? Not everybody gets a trophy. I'm sorry. That's just not the way this country operates. But we should get everybody equal opportunity, you know, to succeed.
Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, Alfredo Ortiz. The Real Race Revolutionary is How Minority Entrepreneurship Can Overcome America's Racial and Economic Divides. On Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed.